episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by Delta. Go to ledgerstatus.com/delta to learn more. Delta's a fantastic portfolio tracking application. Track Bitcoin and every other coin, sync your wallets, do all sorts of cool stuff with Delta. It's the only way to track what you've got going on in the cryptocurrency landscape. I use it every day. Thanks to Delta, and go to ledgerstatus.com/delta for more. Now here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here today with CryptoCred, somebody that I've known for over a year now, and I'm happy to finally have the opportunity to bring him onto the podcast. Hey, Cred.
Hi, man. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Wow, it's going well. Thanks for being here. You are one of my favorite analysts in our, I don't know what you call the crypto trader landscape. It's an interesting bunch, wouldn't you say?
It's quite unique. We're not professional or doxed enough for financial Twitter. I think we're our own little subset.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed the way you approach markets because you've learned a lot in a short amount of time, and you share both your learning process and your analysis as you go along. You know what? One of the things I actually don't know is what got you interested in crypto. I know roughly when you got in, but I don't know what got you interested.
It's a very uninteresting and somewhat arbitrary story, actually. So first,
well, I want to hear experience,
it. I'm sure. First little run-in with Bitcoin was about 2.5 years ago, if not slightly more, 2.5-3 years ago. Somewhere around there. I was paid for some freelance translation work in Bitcoin. So I set up a wallet on Coinbase and kind of just got paid in that. And that was sort of it. I left it there to simmer, didn't really do much. And then in the news, actually, last sort of middle-ish of last year was all the stuff about the fork and Bitcoin Cash and all of that stuff, if memory serves correctly.
Yeah, like you saw that in your local news or something?
No, I think it was just online, the tech section of some website, you know, nothing.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It was getting mainstream. Yeah, it was getting kind of mainstream tech news
media. It was, yeah. And that's kind of where I ran into it. And then I remembered that I still have some. And, you know, so I kind of just thought I'll keep an eye on it because if it's in the news, you know, maybe something's changed. And then I just started kind of exploring the community a bit. I think it was on Twitter or maybe some sort of forum that a bunch of guys were going to have this podcast type thing, and they're going to talk about crypto and what the next hot coins are, you know, that generic type of stuff. I was like, okay, well, this sounds cool. And so I jumped in. It's almost a bit like shitcoin talk, just the hosts aren't as good, as nowhere near as knowledgeable, right?
Yeah.
And so basically what happened was I joined this TeamSpeak server. And the guy was like, okay, these are the charts I'm going to talk about. And he just posted a bunch of TradingView links. And I had no experience in trading or TA or anything at the time. And I was like, oh, this looks cool. You know, all these fancy lines and names and shapes and all this other wonderful stuff on the price chart. And I was like, I kind of want to, you know, I listened to him speak and couldn't make any sense of it. So I thought that it would be a wise use of my time, try to understand what these TA chart people do. And the rest is history, I suppose, as they say.
Yeah, and you weren't particularly involved in traditional markets or anything at the time either?
Not from a trading perspective, no. I mean, I'd follow them and follow, you know, financial news and other such developments, but as a speculator, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, and you're trained in the legal profession, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, well, yes, trained is a very generous very generous adjective to use. Or, you know, I did, because in the UK, the way law works is it's an undergrad degree, whereas in the US, you do your JD, I believe it's called, after you do an undergrad degree. So yeah, that's what I went to university for. Didn't drop out, finished all of that, and that was just a few months ago, sort of middle of this year. And yeah, now I'm doing this speculating
on cryptocurrency markets.
Yeah, primarily cryptocurrency markets. Yeah, that's been, you know, I do get a lot of questions of whether I trade forex and other stuff. I certainly follow it from like a price action point of view. It behaves very well technically with a lot more consistency. But just factually, I get enough setups trading on the exchange. The instruments that I trade on the exchange that I trade on to kind of keep me going. You know, there's no shortage of setups there the way I trade. But, you know, if everything dies, I don't mind moving on to something else. You know, if it moves, if there's a chart with it, there's a good chance that I'll be able to apply my system to it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've been thinking through myself is just that, you know, I guess you could say TA or market cycles in general, they work in crypto quite quickly. So, you know, the however many bubbles we've had on the Bitcoin side of things, not to mention all the altcoin markets over the period of 9 years. Well, that's hardly enough time for a single market cycle in the traditional equities market. So a lot of people come in and they're like, well, it's been 3 months. But what they don't realize is like, you know, a market cycle to really, you know, go through the boom and bust cycle and everything that is involved in that can take years. Yeah. But it does happen quicker, I think, in crypto as an emerging asset class, if you will, than it does in traditional markets. So I think that someone that's learning to trade in the crypto landscape, you can experience a lot of the emotions and go through a lot of the trials and tribulations of being a trader that's learning in this world. You can do it quickly, but then you can apply it to a lot of other markets. Not to say they all act exactly the same, but the underlying TA principles, I think crypto trades quite technically. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, it does. I suppose it depends on kind of the instrument you're trading and just what the market's like. You know, some weeks, if you trade really basic stuff like I do, the market just behaves well, is usually how I describe it. Like, you know, it's not being mean. And it kind of does what you'd expect it to do when it comes into certain structures. Other months are a lot more choppy. And it's still, so this is the thing, right? When price disrespects certain price structures, people think kind of, oh, well, TA isn't working right now, right? Or markets ignoring TA, that kind of thing. That's very rarely true in my experience. It's just making it very difficult for your straightforward technical traders to make straightforward trades. Right. So, I mean, recently, those of you who kind of want to go back on your hourly or 4 hour charts, when we kind of made the run up from, you know, 3,500, 3,600 and started going sideways between sort of 4,000 and 4,300, price established quite a nice floor there, right? Like a nice level. Mm-hmm. Then it broke down all the way down to 3,800. And so, you know, that's a classic support resistance setup, right? You've got like on the hourly chart, at least a four touch level, cleanly broken, nice rounded retest. You'd expect resistance and for price to sell off. What does it do? It completely mashes through the level, consolidates a bit, and then eventually drops off, right? So does that mean TA kind of didn't work? Some people might say so. I disagree. I just think you need to be able to anticipate structure failure if you're a technical trader, and how to trade when structures don't behave like the majority of people trading them would expect them to behave.
Mm-hmm. I know you apply technicals. Do you consider fundamentals when you're trying to do analysis, or do you try to mostly ignore the fundamental components of a trade?
Sure. So, I mean, there needs to be some level of fundamental analysis. So if a project is just completely exit scammed and it's dead or full fraud,
yeah,
I wouldn't be trying to bid support levels. So there's at least that. For me personally, the way I use fundamentals is to basically contextualize when I want to sit out or not apply my technical trading system. So, you know, stuff like big news events, exchange maintenance, perhaps some sort of derivatives or, you know, synthetic instrument settlement like futures. I basically use it as a filter for times where I think price may not behave as well as I'd like, and I'd rather sit out those periods rather than trade them. But what I don't do is let fundamentals inform my trading system in the sense of what structures I trade, how I manage my risk on those structures, all of that type of stuff. So I kind of use it to like an on and off switch. So fundamentals will inform when I want to and when I don't, more importantly, when I don't want to apply my system. But it never really creeps into the technical side of things, whereby it affects the parameters of the trades I take.
Do you ever consider the broader market cycle? So like, I consider that part of the fundamentals, right? So, you know, Bitcoin's been unwinding basically all of 2018. It doesn't mean that there aren't bullish moves, but pretty much 2018 has been about all about unwinding from a pretty classic bubble top. So is that part of a bias that you establish for yourself, or do you try to avoid that?
So, I mean, there are two things to say to that with regard to my system. The first is that I'd like to think that as someone who pays a lot of attention to higher timeframes, like sort of monthly, weekly, daily type structures, that that type of trend, or at least that type of strong directional bias, will be evident for me from a technical point of view without necessarily having to rely on it on the, from a fundamental point of view. So, you know, if it is an unwinding, as you mentioned, I'd at least like to tell myself or like to think that my system would tell me to be more short biased or to avoid longs or however, you know, one likes to trade directional bias. And the second thing, slightly more radical, if you will, is that for me, it almost doesn't matter because my trading style, for the most part, isn't trend biased or trend influenced. So I trade level to level, right? I'm not massively a swing trader. Most of my stuff will be like on the hourly chart, and I'll get in at a certain level and I'll just get out full size at the next level, right? So I'm just waiting for structure to give me a reaction, and the reaction doesn't need to last particularly long, only until the next structure in the opposite direction, right?
Let's discuss that a little bit, because I think that you and I approach markets in different ways in that regard.
Sure.
I personally like to be quite cognizant of the trend, and I feel like I succeed more in trending markets. It's one of the reasons I like equities or stocks, because you know, usually you're in a bullish market or a bearish market, and a lot of equities markets don't really have like years of sideways, so you can create yourself a trending bias that you then apply technical analysis to. When you do level-to-level trading, like you said, can you explain what you mean in terms of how you analyze levels and how do you differentiate between, you know, when you're analyzing a trend, how do you apply your system, say, in a market that is trending? It's not just, you know, going sideways. And this, for me, this has been a differentiator in how I approach, like, Forex versus stocks and which one crypto kind of fits into in terms of style sometimes, you know?
Sure. So, I mean, the way I approach it at its most basic is it is hinged on higher timeframes, but for the most part, for the actual trading, which some people are interested in, I like to look at where market established support and then where that structure or that floor was broken. And the inverse of that, if you will, of where the market has established resistance, usually in the form of just clustered highs or maybe even just one episode, if you will, of resistance, and look for where that structure was broken. And that in itself almost presents, at least from on an intraday basis, a directional bias in itself. So, for example, if I have a support level and the market breaks it, that's not just support turning to resistance, it's market giving you evidence that it wants to trade lower, right? So if support's being broken, that's kind of evidence of bearish flow, if you will. And so when that happens, my mind switches to, I want to be selling rallies, right? And if I want to be selling rallies, what structure do I sell them into? Well, where the market previously found support, I anticipate that it will find resistance, right? How does that work with trending stuff? Well, look, if the market's trending up, there's a really good chance that there will have been a period of highs where the market originally found resistance, but because it kept trading higher, those highs or that structure was subsequently violated, right? And so when the market dips back to that same level, I'd like to be a buyer. And that can, and I mean, I also use a bunch of different stuff like directional, we can get into this after, for example, but I will always look at the daily chart to see if there's any evidence of a directional bias that I should be aware of.
How do you handle that in times of price discovery?
I don't really. And well, it depends on what the chart actually looks like. Because some of the tools I use to establish directional bias will be certain candlestick patterns, certain candlestick formations, also major levels being broken, major levels being lost. But when it's price discovery, I mean, look, if something's just trending and keeps making all-time highs with higher highs and higher lows, I'm not going to be looking for levels to sell, right? Because by definition, there aren't any levels to sell.
Right. You're looking for levels to buy until those levels are refused.
Quite, yeah. So that kind of sets up an automatic trend filter, if you will. If I'm someone who sells broken support and the market's in price discovery upwards, I've got nothing to sell, right? My only option is to buy resistance structures that were broken on that way up. And the same works for downside price discovery as well.
Both of us pay quite a bit of attention to weekly and daily charts. And when you do that, at least when you're going down, if you're going down, you always have, or usually you have some previous ranges where prices existed, unless you're literally making all-time lows since an asset's been listed. But in terms of Bitcoin, coming down from $20,000, unless it goes sub 10 cents, we've got some price history.
Yes.
And since we broke off of 6,400, it's a little bit of a blend, right? So you're somewhat doing price discovery in terms of we haven't seen those levels in a while, but we did see those levels last year. The issue that I have run into is you only have really 30 to 60 days for kind of the high volume areas. A lot of those price levels had large gaps. Are you paying significant attention to 2017 levels, like the last time we were around, say, 2,700 to 3K, and the last time we were around 3,800 to 4,300? Like, are you looking strongly at those levels as levels that we should be paying attention to now, or are you treating it more like discovery, price discovery in the reverse direction?
That's a really good question. So I've been quite vocal since 6K broke that I'm personally not comfortable with putting a whole lot of weight on the structure from, the last quarter or so of last year. I mean, the price action just doesn't look awfully clean to me. On a daily time frame, at least, you've got lots of just small-bodied candles. Price didn't, you know, that to me at least, the price action isn't awfully clean around then, right? And if I'm using levels from a year ago, plus I have the confounding factor that, to me personally, as an analyst and the structures that I like, it's not entirely clear. The weight I'm going to put on that or on those structures is going to be considerably less. Now, does that mean I don't have a solution whatsoever to, you know, get my trades or at least higher time frame ideas on Bitcoin? Absolutely not. Because there's two ways, essentially, well, I mean, this is grossly oversimplifying, but at least two ways in which you can establish where support has been found, right? The first is just buying what you anticipate to be a support level, right? So people looking back to the chart from the end of last year, they might look at the highs at, you know, 4,000, or, you know, if we go much lower, those old highs at 3,000. You can use those types of structures from back then, and that's fine. But your second option to get an idea of where the market is going to bounce or has found support isn't to buy the support in itself, but actually to wait for resistance to break. Right? Mm-hmm. It sounds very straightforward when you say it, but a lot of people don't consider that perspective, that you can either buy the support level anticipating that it holds, or you can buy the resistance level, which is more recent, once it's been broken. Because at that point, you have a recently established support level, which has kind of proven to you that it's doing its job, because the buying at a certain structure was enough to break resistance, right? So anyone looking at the Bitcoin daily chart, for example, I appreciate it's a podcast. The level, for example, that I have marked out is 4348.5 on the BitMEX pair. And that's based on the low of the 20th of November on the daily chart, right? So that's a really important level to me because, you know, when we broke 6K, price just fell off a cliff. Right. For me, 4348.5, that daily close on the 20th of November is like a really key level. Because it's the first little evidence of buying we had from that massive move down. And then look how perfectly...
For people listening, Bitcoin consolidated for months, and we reached all-time record low volatility, basically, depending on which time frame you're looking at. And there was one huge day of selling, which it calmed down for 4 days or so, and then it had another huge day of selling, and then the next huge day of selling is where Cred is talking about, where in a single daily, it went from around 48.90 all the way down to just under maybe a dollar under 4K, so yeah, like an $800 or $900 range. But it closed that daily up around 43.48, whatever number he just said. So what we saw was a wick was established on that daily, so there was some sign of buying. And then the next day, the open and close were inside the open and close of the prior day. So essentially, in technical terms, that would be called like an inside day, where you're essentially establishing some momentum or some coiling up, if you will, for another move. And we did have another push down from there. But for you, that established that as an important level worth paying attention to.
It did, and the market used it, right? Immediately. 43.48 on the, delineate horizontally on your daily charts, you can see the market came back to it and tested it. So going back to your point, do I want to use structures from 2017? I mean, if they're clear to you, use them. For me personally, as an analyst, they're not awfully clear to me, or at least compared to the more recent structures we had on the way down, I'd rather use that and to wait for resistance to break, rather than use structures from 2017 and hope one of the support levels holds. Does that make sense? I'd rather, as a buyer,
yeah, it does,
wait for recent resistance to break rather than wait for old support to hold.
It's difficult for people to put their mind to, because what you're saying is, I'm not interested in buying now, but I am interested in buying higher.
Yes.
So it's, for a lot of us, that's, mentally, we want to say, well, I don't want to buy until it's the absolute best deal on the market, right?
Yeah.
Like, I would rather buy at 3K than 43.50. And what you're saying is, if you got a daily close, say, at 43.50, all of a sudden you're saying, look, I'm interested now in buying because now I think it has momentum further up. And someone's like, well, why did you do that? I bought at 3,500. And what you're saying is, you're more confident that because of that prior level that was set, now that you have this close above 43.50, you have higher confidence that your trade will be a profitable one, even if you didn't catch the full length of the upward momentum.
Yes, precisely. I'm not trying to be a hero, right? And I think the majority of people who are speculating in these markets certainly have no business trying to catch the bottom. I mean, I don't know about you, Brian, my Twitter feed was absolutely inundated with bottom catchers going all the way back to like 5.8. 5.8, 5.5, 5.2, 5.48. It's just absurd. And I'm saying I'd rather avoid doing that and avoid just getting either stopped out or averaging over like thousands of dollars trying to catch the bottom. I'd rather wait for the market to prove, or at least give me good evidence that it's found the bottom, and then I'll pay up, but then expect price to move with higher probability, rather than try to be a legend and use unclear structures to me from last year to try to time the bottom, right? I don't even see an issue with sitting out of this market until 6.2K is reclaimed, right? I think the 6,000, 6,200, basically from 5,800 to 6,200, that is the best and highest quality technical level that we've ever had on Bitcoin. I don't think anything even comes close from a structural point of view. And because it's currently above market, that's resistance, right? So what's wrong with waiting for price to trade above 6,200-ish and then opening, your positions, rather than try to trade whatever happens below it and still having to sell the 6,000 level because it's the best technical resistance we've ever had on this instrument? Does that make any sense at all?
No, it absolutely does. And I think it's really interesting, but I agree with you. Certainly, if you look at the, an overall volume profile of Bitcoin, I saw a number recently. It was something like there's been $1 trillion traded on Bitcoin this year. So obviously, no other time in the history of Bitcoin is going to come close to that. We have had previous times where we spent a year on a basically $200 to $300 price range back in the last bear market. So I do think that was obviously a key level. I don't think we're going back to $200 or $300, but in terms of what's the closest tradable range, I totally agree. That's an incredibly important zone. And I also would say it probably depends on your time frame too. Like if you're willing to look at this stuff all the time, you can make similar decisions to what you were just saying about that 4350 level. You can do that using a 4 hour chart or a 1 hour chart if you're really looking at this more, or a 5 minute chart if you're a degenerate gambler. You can make similar decisions, but your risk profile needs to accommodate that as well, right? Because you might exit your trade based on, you know, $20 or $30 swings in price that can happen in 15 minutes. So it's just a different way of analyzing what you're doing. But generally, I think it's funny because what you're saying is you'd rather be a buyer higher. That's really along the same lines of just agreeing with the fact that the trend is your friend, right? So, but approaching it from an entirely different perspective.
It's quite simple. I'm demanding more evidence from the market that we have a bottom in, right? And there are different sort of standards of proof, you know, like a reasonable, like a decent standard of proof. As I said, if 4350-ish or maybe even 4500 conservatively rolls over, I think there's a good chance we rubber band to like 5.5, maybe 5.8. But from a longer term swing, whatever outlook, however you want to label it, I'm going to wait for the, what I think is, because of my recency bias, I still think 5.8, 6.2 is the best technical level we have on Bitcoin. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying we'll have really good evidence of some sort of low in if 5,800 to 6,200 gets reclaimed. And not only that, I think that the probability for a move, for a violent move away from those levels is also higher than perhaps catching the quote unquote bottom and then having to deal with consolidating price, not really doing anything crazy for quite a while, right? So for me, it's higher probability buying above 5,862. And I think I can make a good argument that you get a more violent reaction from that structure as well. So
I think it's funny how we were learning a good bit of stuff at the same time. I mean, I've been trading markets for a long time, but I think the volatility in crypto forces you to understand TA more than some other markets. Also the speculative nature of crypto. The TA means more than the fundamentals in a lot of ways, certainly on middle timeframes. When you talk about the way you trade now, what made you decide that this is the strategy that you wanted to implement and make yours versus some of the others, like trend following strategies or using various tools at your disposal, moving averages or, you know, whatever else?
Bluntly, results. So just simply
results in your own trading or testing that you did on markets?
No, results in my own trading and the testing as well, just studying price, but that's usually not compelling enough to actually make me put money on the line. That can inform, that can lead me in the right direction, but ultimately I'll need to see how what my balance looks like if I'm executing this system. For me it was mostly results. It just worked better. And the simplicity of it was very attractive, you know, trying to incorporate indicators into even a discretionary system with like some mechanical elements. I just found it so difficult once I wanted to systematize my trading to incorporate a bunch of indicators. You know, what does confirmation on an indicator actually look like? You know, if the RSI is at a certain point and I want to buy, does that like invalidate my trade? Can I still take it? You know, what time frames do I look at? I just found it very noisy and difficult. And at that point, looking at price action, I was getting a much clearer view of sort of recent levels and just how what the market participants are looking for, what price is reaching for, that type of stuff. And I eventually just faded indicators out of it. And it just made it so much easier to construct a system, a discretionary trading system with mechanical elements to it, when I didn't have to look at a bunch of extra stuff, just price structure. So short answer to your question, why do I do what I do? Because it works and because it's simple. And I like simple because simple means I can be systematic both in the construction of the system itself, but also in logging or recording how the system performs.
Do you pay much attention to other levels or systems that you know other market participants pay attention to? So let's use me for an example. You were throwing out this 6.2 level. That could coincide quite well with me, because I, like, for instance, right now for me, in terms of what's going to say, hey, this market is bullish or not, traditional markets, and eventually what I'm looking for in terms of what's going to be show me the sign of the end of the bear market is I want to reclaim the 200-day moving average. And actually, I can perfectly see how the 200-day moving average is bending its way straight towards that, you know, 6K to 6.2 level. It's it's still lagging up at, you know, 6,500 right now. But even if we were to make a near-term test to it, it could be down in that same region. Are you paying attention? Hey, where's the 200-day moving average? Because I know that's where Brian is going to be, you know, putting his sell orders. Are you paying attention to those systems as well to better inform your own levels?
I think you'll excuse the language. It's a bit of mental masturbation when people do that. It's either that or they try to kind of flex and say, oh, these are what the silly cloud traders or the silly RSI traders or whatever are doing, whereas this is what my woke system prescribes. I just simply look at technical tools as, can this consistently assist my trading system in a way that I can incorporate, period, right? So can I incorporate this tool or this piece of data into my trading system on a consistent basis to make it better? And I haven't personally discovered a way in which I could do that with, well, not even a way, I haven't thought, there hasn't been a need for me to kind of try to get this macro perspective of what other people are looking at and to either kind of be alongside them or to counter trade, that type of stuff. I think it's generally quite overhyped. A lot of the price action guys do that in a very arrogant way. They're like, oh, look at all these, you know, retail, dumb money, RSI people, instead of price did this. I just don't see a need for it. I'm confident in the structures that I trade. They do well enough for me. If I look at other stuff, it'll just be intellectual curiosity more than anything. And I think quite generally incorporating something like that into a system would be quite tedious. So no, I don't, aside from just kind of scrolling through Twitter.
Yeah, good. And I would actually agree for the most part. There are times where, you know, if based on the way I look at a market and then, you know, I follow someone that looks at a market in an entirely different way, where I see something that they came up with that interests me a great deal, or I use it as an opportunity. Let's say that I entered the trade and then I notice someone else who I respect as a trader entered the exact opposite trade. Like, sometimes I want to know.
Great feeling.
One great feeling. but also I want to know, like, what informed their trade and what can I learn from this? And I've, you know, I've evolved my own strategy over time based on similar things, like what's going to improve my strike rate, what's going to improve my just overall feeling in this trade, like that it's lining up for a way that I feel comfortable being in this position.
The only way I do use that type of sort of, the only way I do look at structures that I don't trade myself is in the context of pattern failure. So if I see, for example, a very obvious pattern or structure that I think, especially if, I mean, Twitter is great for this. You know, if everyone's got the same rectangle, pennant, flag, whatever structure you prefer, if I see that structure fail, I will kind of look at that as confluence in a very non-systematic way. So, you know, if everyone's like bearish because of a certain head and shoulders top reversal construction, and then my system tells me that I'm actually looking for longs here, right? And then the head and shoulders fails, like price, you know, goes through the right shoulder or however the you choose to classify the failure criterion. That can be quite nice. But beyond that, in terms of, you know, using all these tools to kind of confluence or layer my bids or my asks, that kind of stuff, no. But I do think there's value in looking at pattern failure. So when the really obvious structures don't do what people think they'll do, usually you can get some violent reactions around there just because of the sheer volume of people who are trapped expecting the textbook scenario to play out.
Yeah, and a classic pattern trader would actually completely agree with you in that, because If you're pattern trading, you know that a percentage of those patterns are going to fail. Like, you're looking at a particular pattern because statistically that pattern may resolve in the way that you anticipate, say 60% of the time. And 40% of the time, that means it will not. And actually, a pattern trader would tell you that when it doesn't, it actually can be a more violent move in the opposite direction because it failed to finish the pattern, when the pattern by default should be bullish or bearish. If it goes the other direction, that really provides even stronger momentum. So yeah, a pattern trader would actually agree with you. And I think this gets to the point where you can actually use different systems. I'd like to take a quick break to say thank you to Delta for being a LedgerCast partner. Go to ledgerstatus.com to learn more about Delta. Delta offers the best Bitcoin and cryptocurrency portfolio tracking software that you can get. I've been using Delta for a long time, and I can't imagine checking my portfolio balances without it. You can track multiple portfolios. You can sync directly to exchanges or wallets to make it really easy to track funds as you move them around or trade them. It really makes it so much simpler. You know, you can track over 3,000 altcoins on Delta. They're always adding new exchanges and coins, whether they're on centralized or decentralized exchanges or anywhere else. It's a really fantastic tool. They have hundreds of thousands of happy users, and they've got lots of interesting features like the new direct feature, which allows projects that you have in your watch list or in your balances to just directly contact you through their news announcements and stuff like that. It's really cool. I like Delta. It's a great app to use. Go to ledgerstatus.com/delta to learn more and see the different options that you have for desktop, mobile, and everywhere else. You can do a lot of different things to analyze a market, to seek entries, and to find potential setups for your trade. But at the end of the day, I think you can throw a dart at the dartboard. And if your risk management is good, you can outperform someone with a good strike rate, but that's not really doing any or very good risk management in their trading. You talk about this a lot, so I was hoping that you'd share with our audience about how you think about risk management and then how do you manage risk in your own trades.
Sure. So how I think about risk management, it's essentially being cognizant that markets aren't perfect. Your setups aren't perfect. Your execution of your system and your system itself, obviously, are not perfect. And it's essentially a bit of a cheat code, allowing yourself to be wrong, depending how frequently on a bunch of things. But you're allowed to be wrong and still make money, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of my own personal development, I have slightly leaned off being like, oh, you know, risk management number one, what you do really doesn't matter. I still think you need some semblance of a reasonably functional system or strategy to trade. Because, you know, even if you're like risking only 1% per trade and like 3-to-1 risk reward, whatever reasonably set or reward, 3-to-1 reward to risk, there we go. You know, even if you're doing all of those things, but your system is just pure trash, you're not going to develop as a trader. You're going to plateau, right? If anything, I'd much rather, if I had to deal with someone or, you know, talk about trading or, you know, mentor, whatever, that type of context, I'd much rather have someone who's got a set of entry techniques that they know they can identify and know they can use. And then just I can help them define the risk of their structure and their just overall trading. I'd much rather deal with someone like that and someone who knows everything about risk management, all these models, risk reward, position size calculations, whatever, but genuinely doesn't know what a good setup looks like, right? So I don't really mind people doing the risk management bit after the fact, because I think it's a lot easier to teach than entry techniques, if that makes sense.
You think the risk management is easier to teach?
I think the risk management is easier to teach. Yeah, I do. I do. Because not an awful lot. I think it's harder to teach someone good entry techniques that they can identify on their own, execute on their own, know when not to execute, and know how to kind of define their risk on a certain structure. I think all of that stuff is a lot harder than telling someone, here's how you figure out your position size. Here's why you should only risk like 1-5% per trade. You know, here's how leverage works. Because at its core, that's usually the type of stuff it comes down to, at least with the traders that I surround myself with, right? Most of their stuff was going to be percentage of their capital risk per trade, risk-reward ratios, expectancies, strike rates, all of that stuff. But it's nothing crazy, right? No models for the most part, nothing algorithmic or quantitative. Or for the most part, it's going to be, I've got a system. The system has a positive expectancy. If I follow these risk guidelines, I won't do my ass. How I do it personally, there's nothing honestly that special. I risk between 2-5% per trade. The higher time frame trades, or at least the setups which have a higher time frame confluence, I will risk actually more than the lower time frame stuff on structures that I'm less clear on. I mostly trade level to level, which means I, for the most part, will have one entry, one stop loss, and one target, one place where I want to get out.
Do you place those on wicks or on closes, out of curiosity?
Stop losses.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the structure that I'm trading, right? So my approach to stop losses is, a lot of people think it needs to be some magic number or like even ATR based stop, or basically some sort of fixed digit where you just put this thing called a stop loss. Whereas for me, the way I think of a trade is, I've got an entry thesis, a reason I want to be in the trade. And at some point, that reason has to be wrong, right? It needs to be falsifiable. And my stop loss goes where beyond a kind of, I guess, reasonable doubt or on the side of probability, that thesis has been falsified. So for levels that I trade, I mean, it kind of depends on what the chart looks like, but usually the candle that breaks the level, if I'm setting a retracement to it, I'll kind of base my stop around there if it's logical. But all of it is predetermined, right? Without getting too much, especially because it's not like a video thing, the thing that I'd want to emphasize is all of it is predetermined.
But if, let's say you're trading on the hourly chart, and you set that predetermined level, does that mean that you're making your order entry typically before, you know, like at the same time as you make the entry, you're setting an initial order entry for the stop? Because one of the things that I see often in this market, and it requires me to be patient with my own stops and risk management, is I have to convince myself to let the same time frame that I'm trading to essentially let the candle close before I make the stop, or I almost have two levels, right? One where it's like, I'm going to let this candle close within this range. And then another level, it's like, all right, I got to get out.
What
I see a lot, and I know this affects level to level style trading, like what you're talking about, is in an illiquid market, you can get some pretty gnarly wicks that are going after those same levels that we identify as our stops. So do you account for that? How do you look at that as part of your stop management?
So I used to get burned a lot by bidding or offering a level and thinking I'll put my stop in later, especially for some of the lower time frame setups I used to trade. Before I could even put in my stop, my level's engulfed and I've just doubled or tripled my risk. So because of that experience, if I'm entering the market, I'll have a stop to go with that order. As you said, the price I pay for that certainty that if I'm filled, I also have a stop loss present, is that I could get wicked out, spiked out, whatever. But the way I actually trade at levels is also important. People seem to think that I identify a level that I want to trade and then I will just leave a limit order at that level and go live my life, right? That's not how it works in probably at this point, the majority of the level trades I take. So a level is just a structure, right? So when price comes into a level, I've got no idea whether it's going to do its job or whether it's going to flip and, you know, do the complete opposite of what I wanted to do. So if I'm, for example, if a support broke, it's now become resistance. So technically I'd want to sell, but there's no reason that price can't just completely crush through it and trade higher.
Right. So let's use an example level of that. Let's say 4K is that level, right? So if it's below 4K and 4K is your level, then when it's coming back up to 4K, you don't know if 4K is going to hold. You're not trying to predict that. You're just saying, I'm going to trade based on the action around that level.
Yes. And that usually takes two forms. So if I've got a really high quality level, so, you know, violent reactions, multi-touch, it's recent, maybe there's some sort of higher time frame confluence, basically a high quality structure that I want to trade. If I'm comfortable, I don't mind leaving a limit order at that level, right? Because I'm saying this structure is such, you know, this structure of such quality that if price even visits it for a second, I want to be trading it. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's one option. The second option, if I'm more weary or I have reasons to be cautious, or the market's looking especially bullish coming into a resistance or especially bearish coming into support, I essentially wait for a lower time frame breakdown off of that level, right? So for example, if it's an hourly structure, I'll look at how price behaves around it, let's say on the 15 minute. And then if I get that lower time frame breakdown, then I'll step in and say, I've now have more. So it's all about evidence the way I trade, right? So if the level is a really high quality, I'm saying that in itself is enough evidence for me to warrant me risking capital. If the level is not that high quality, or I have reasons to doubt that price will behave in the way I want it to behave around that level, I'm going to tell myself that I need more evidence from the market that I want to be short or long this level. What does more evidence look like? Well, if it's a resistance, I want to see evidence of a breakdown on lower timeframes coming off of it. And then if it's a support, I want to see evidence of higher timeframe buying as price comes into it. It's fairly straightforward, at least when you say it out loud. When you're trying to trade BitMEX overload, it gets a bit more difficult.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about leverage in a minute. But first, we got a great question from someone named Johnny Funderud, assuming that's not a real name. Maybe it is. I get this a lot. I want to hear your take on it. And it's basically that, you know, they've got a job. They work 40 hours a week. They don't have constant access to a computer. Is it worth learning to trade properly, or should they just dollar cost average into Bitcoin? Currently, they say they're doing both, but their trading account is going down. People should know we're not giving financial advice, but in terms of if we were in this situation and we can't stare at charts all day and we're trying to have exposure to a market, how do you address it in that type of scenario where you can't babysit positions? You know, you're looking at something once a day, or maybe even you do all your analysis on a Sunday afternoon or something. How do you approach a market in that scenario?
Yeah. So, I mean, just as a general cursory thing, those are two very different things. By dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin as an investor versus trading. Yeah. Those are quite distinct and require their own different skills and time, etc. So, I mean, I don't know how much the gentleman is doing to further his investing, you know, himself as an investor, but that's reasonably distinct, I would argue, from improving as a trader, right? In terms of what do you do, is it even worth learning trading if you only have X fixed amount of time? I would say yes. I learned how to trade while doing my degree full time. It is more difficult. That's very clear. And also, I would once again distinguish between learning how to trade and actually trading. because finding time to study is a lot easier than finding time to sit and watch a market or babysit a trade, right? What helped me a lot balance time is a very, very carefully curated list of sources to learn from, right? So if you have high quality so-called mentors, then you can actually learn a lot in a very short period of time. I credit the majority of my success, of course, being an incredibly relative term, but success in this to the fact that I was never really led astray. I never really wasted years of my life learning systems or structures that were totally nonsensical. I was very lucky that I caught the good eggs early on and kind of built my network from there. So is it worth learning how to trade? I mean, 99% of people who ask me if it's worth learning to trade, I say no, because good trading isn't sexy. It's tedious. It's lonely. It's very difficult. And most of the stuff no one talks about on Twitter, right? Staying up all night to manage a trade and then getting out at break even, or taking a setup, losing it three times, and the one time you don't take it, it plays out perfectly. Getting slipped, double your risk, and then just having to cut your size, and then you get a really big winner. Losing for weeks on end and not knowing how it affects your system. Like, this is shitty, right?
And for people that are listening, this is not something that goes away. Like, if you're trying to actively trade, and depending on the degree that you're doing so, You struggle with these things throughout your throughout your experience trading. I can't tell you, especially when you're taking certain types of trades, like they can be very stressful. I've experienced that in crypto some, but recently for me, I mean, equities have been a total whirlwind because the volatility has increased so much in that world. So yeah, that's not to belittle the the experience component, but even when you do gain experience, like you identify setups and you learn these things, you still are battling with the markets. Markets are vicious beasts, so beating them is quite the feat.
Yeah, they'll still squeeze you. They'll still make your life difficult, even when you know what you're looking for. So look, to give a short answer, or to round off a very long answer, I suppose, it's possible. If you want to learn how to trade on limited time, it is possible. The two things that I would say is, very carefully curate who to learn from, and don't try to don't mix and match concepts or whatever else. Just find a style that's at least inherently appealing or sensible to you and focus on that. You only need one or two setups on one or two timeframes to trade profitably. Okay, so it's not like you need to start just consuming every trading book, every indicator in the world to make some sort of sense of it. And the second thing I would say is, necessarily on that type of time limitation, you must limit yourself to higher time frames. So daily and 4 hour is, well, weekly, daily and 4 hour, probably more than enough. There's nothing wrong with just daily and skipping the intraday time frames entirely. And if anything, as a developing trader, that might honestly boost your development of learning how to interpret higher time frame price action or whatever system you trade. And all that means is when you drop down lower, when you have more time, or if you have more time, it's just refining those higher time frames. So one, focus your learning on a couple of things from a couple of people, whatever, if it makes sense to you and the mentor is in some way credible, that's enough. You don't need to know everything. And secondly, use higher time frames. And you can then, with those two things, you really don't need much time to see quite rapid improvement in your trading if you put the work in, I would argue.
Yeah. My only addition to that would be, personally, I find value, especially if you're looking at it less often, to take it slower. If you are making positions and you can quickly risk too much or go in too strong, like you could say, like say you're looking at something with a fundamental thesis, right? Like you're bullish on crypto, or you're like me recently where you're looking at distressed markets. So I've been looking at like the uranium sector. And you could say, yeah, I think this sector is interesting. Well, if you say you have a $100 budget to put into uranium, well, if you put your $100 in that and you're approaching this from a fundamental investor's thesis point of view, well, if you just plop it in there, then you're done, right? You're in, mm-hmm. and now you apply your risk management and you can be out before the sector does what you're even anticipating. So if you're mixing fundamentals and technicals, I would just personally say it's safer to just take it a little slower and enter over time. Even if the market does what you were thinking it may do right away and you only got like 20% of the amount of money that you anticipated being into that, whatever that, position is or sector, that's okay. You're better off because you manage your risk on the downside, right? Because it could take a long time in certain markets for something to make the turnaround or do the thing that you're anticipating from a fundamental perspective. And I think getting to the question that was asked, they said, can you do this? And I'm dollar cost averaging and I'm trading. I think actually you can do a blend. I think personally, the way I approach it, Cred, and I'm curious if you do something similar or if you disagree. But for me, let's say I have a budget and I want to put, $1,000 into something. I'm okay putting, say, $100 a month over 10 months, and then I might manage the part that I have in. Like I might trade that part, but only be in so much every month. So I'm dollar cost averaging into my exposure of a market. At the same time, I'm trading the components that I put into the market. I'm not just blindly putting them in there and letting them go. Not that I think that's necessarily a bad idea either if your fundamental viewpoint of a market is sound over a long term. You're essentially dollar cost averaging so that your price is whatever the price was for the year if you're doing that on a monthly basis. Don't think that's a problem necessarily. Personally, I'm just pickier than that, right? Like I want to trade it basically as soon as it's in there, but I may increase my exposure to that market over time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I suppose I'm more cynical. I don't, at least in my experience, trust people's discretion and discipline enough to do that properly. And what usually ends up happening is they just blur the lines between trading and investment. And once they start trading, they're like, oh, well, I've got this stack of whatever, you know, like Bitcoin, for example, obviously I'm going to trade it, right? And then it usually never goes terribly well. In terms of dollar cost averaging versus trading, whatever else, you don't need to do both. there's nothing wrong with, for example, you know, doing your DCA into the instrument or asset class that you're interested in, and then learning how to paper trade in a completely different asset class, right?
Yeah.
If anything, I think that's probably going to be slightly better and won't harm you as an investor just because you're a shitty trader. But I've generally have had terrible experiences just with people's stories and myself starting out of trying to separate both and be very diligent and treat them like two different portfolios or whatever else. So I suppose the blunt way of saying what I think is kind of don't shit where you eat. If you're gonna DCA into this asset and treat it as an investor, then treat it as an investor. If you want to learn how to trade, you don't need to do it in the same markets, especially if your discipline is shitty and there's a chance that you just choose to start trading your investor stack. There's nothing wrong with going to another asset class or something else to learn how to trade, especially starting off on a paper trading basis. So none of your investor decisions are put at risk because of your lack of trading skills.
What keeps you interested in crypto relative to saying, you know, I don't care about crypto, I just care about trading a market? Or is that the case? Like, are you fine having zero exposure to crypto and purely trading other markets?
As an investor, I'm not fine having zero exposure to crypto. As a trader, it really depends. It's kind of my roots type thing. So there's this natural allure to trade it. But look, fundamentally, if I see that my system is not performing properly in this asset class, while it can perform better elsewhere, something like Forex, then I'm not mad, you know, I'm not religious about these things. I'm here to make money. So of course I'll go trade something else. But at the same time, there are different considerations as well. You know, I've built a very unbelievable following in this space, and I owe a metric shit ton to people who follow my work, and they primarily come from the crypto angle, right? So it's nothing I'd be able to ever fully leave. But for example, I'd see nothing wrong with if I'm just consistently doing my ass in crypto, saying I'm going to really reduce my exposure from a trading point of view to these markets and reallocate some of it to Forex while still staying very much involved on the analysis and content production front. So I would distinguish between kind of trading my own account to make money versus still just being involved. If the whole thing were to die, I would trade something else. Straight up, I'd have no issue with that. I've spoken to some colleagues who were who took a different position that they'd kind of either quit trading or do something else if crypto were to die. I'd be sorely disappointed, and I really don't think it will happen. But if it were to become untradeable, then I would just move on to another asset class.
Yeah, I personally find pretty much any market to be tradable, and actually the suite of products available to you in other markets, like non-crypto markets. Mm-hmm. The suite of products available to you is actually greater.
The infrastructure as well. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, so you can actually get different, but, you know, similar risk profiles or like volatility. You're just doing it on a different scale because you're probably doing it with a different type of product, whether that's options or, you know, a derivative margin product. Of course, in crypto, depending on where you're based and where you trade, you can get... as much leverage as you possibly could want in your life. So it does go up a level, but you know, you can get exposure to gain or lose as much money as you want in a short amount of time in pretty much any market. There's a platform somewhere that will happily allow you to leverage yourself to death.
Yes, no shortage of those.
Yeah, and personally, It's not that I wasn't, you know, still paying attention to crypto, but to me, the crypto markets, due to the low volatility, were much less interesting over the late summer and fall because of the consolidation that was happening. For me, wanting to trade trends and do the types of analysis that I do, it was a really challenging time to try to care about crypto trading crypto. Because of the correlation from alts to Bitcoin was so direct, and then also because it was just this tightening spring that was very difficult to trade. My personal attention went much more toward equities at the time, because on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, there was so much going on and the volatility was increasing rapidly that I really enjoyed that time. And since we broke down from the 6Ks, that's when crypto has been more fun for me to trade, because the volatility has come back to a great degree. So I hope we actually stick with the volatility. You know, of course, I would, because I do have some long exposure at a baseline level of owning crypto, I would love it to be up. But if it's down, I can still trade that. So
yeah, as long as the rate of it going down is somewhat reasonable, right? I have a friend who doubled his MEX account in about a week. But that week was when Bitcoin just completely did its ass. And so he was only up in like cash terms by like 10% or something absurd. So as long as the rate that, because, you know, cause that's the thing, our instruments, well, the instruments the majority of us trade when it comes to Bitcoin, they're denominated in Bitcoin, right? So if you're trading Forex, you put, this is great point made by Trader Main that we talked about before he tweeted it as well. He says, you know, if you put $10,000 into a Forex account and then you kind of don't do anything with it because stuff comes up you don't want to trade, you come back, that's still most likely going to $10,000, right? You do the same with a BitMEX account and then Bitcoin dies, you've just lost a lot of money with no trading.
Sometimes so if you have to be exposed to Bitcoin to trade a market short, so in our landscape, that's if you're trading leverage on a place like BitMEX or Deribit, you have to own Bitcoin to go in. So you have to hold a synthetic short the entire time you're in that account in order to maintain a dollar value.
So you need to kind of take measures to, it's crazy.
Yeah, and if you're an American, the only place to legally trade on margin right now is either one of the official things like CBOE or CME, which have gaps because you don't trade on weekends, or you can use Kraken with lower leverage. But yeah, in those scenarios, you can be in the dollar. You don't have to be in Bitcoin. You know, it's been funny for me too, and I'll just share this, is that ever since I've been in crypto, because I got interested because of the fundamentals, I have had this long bias. So yeah, similarly, like you can be doing well if you have that long bias and you want to stay exposed to Bitcoin in some way. Mm-hmm. If you're not smart about it, there have been times where I wasn't, you can be doing okay relative to BTC. And then all of a sudden it's like, crap, Bitcoin, the spot value of this is not as good as I wanted.
yes, exactly.
And what's funny for me is this year approaching equities, like I have not really done much selling or trading of stocks in years, because it's just been this raging bull market and I wasn't really concerned in terms of the economy and whatnot. But I made a pretty straightforward decision that I was looking to take profits this year. That's all the way back to January, but certainly once the market moved back up after the huge February drop. So I've been trading equities left and right, and actually I've typically had a short bias, or a take profit bias, if not that. And
close long bias.
yeah, which is really strange, because, you know, typically the stock market likes to go up over the long term. Like it's not the type of thing I want to be permanently in that mindset, because perma bears in a stock market eventually are going to have a bad day. but in terms of my mindset, most people are not on that mindset. And for me, I don't know why, but it's so much easier for me to turn that part of my brain on with stocks than it is for crypto. And I'm not totally sure why that is, but that's how it's been. Fred, where can people keep up with all the stuff you have going on? Because you have a lot of stuff going on all the time.
Gosh, man. Well, much, much slower these days than back in the day. Good old burnout. So Twitter, CryptoCred, C-R-E-D. Telegram. I mean, look, if you go on my Twitter profile, very helpfully, my Twitter banner has all the links to my stuff. So my Telegram, my Medium, and my YouTube. And anything I do, you'll be able to find basically through my Twitter page, if you are so inclined.
Nice. Well, I've loved getting to know you over the past year plus, and I love seeing the way you're looking at markets. Even if you you have your system, and I look at some of the stuff that you do, but I don't use the exact type of system that you do. But I love seeing the way that you're addressing a market, and you put out great material for people, and it's good stuff. So thanks for coming on and sharing some of what you've learned over the years. And yeah, we'll catch y'all next time.
And if you're listening to this, sign up to Ledger Learning. Very few people who I'd happily point out for beginners to learn from, but fucking hell, this guy, just do it. And then even if you don't end up adopting his exact system, the subsequent learning of different tools or whatever technicals will be so much easier if you have that foundation. Not a paid shill. I was just waiting for this Ledger Learning thing to come out for like a year and a half, and now that it has, you should take it if you're in.
Yeah, I was dragging my feet for a really long time. I appreciate you saying that. And you know, to the person's question earlier, I really don't even address the type of person that's looking at, you know, 5 minute and 30 minute candles all the time. Like I really, I'm trying to address someone that you don't want to spend all your time investing. You just want to have exposure to the market and be smart about mm-hmm. the way you're doing it. So I'm really trying to address people that are looking at, you know, 4 hour candles and above really, but in daily and weekly time frames, mixing the fundamentals and the technicals. And I know that's not everybody's style, but it's the way I personally like to address the market. So that's the way that I'm doing so with Learn. So thanks for saying that, Cred. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to y'all next time.
Thank you.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.